Bill Hicks, it's great to see you. Welcome to the Comedy Hour.
Thank you, Len.
I've been listening to your new album all week and enjoying it. It's really cutting-edge stuff.
Beautiful, man. I wish people would buy it all week.
You know, I'm wondering, you're doing gutsy, cutting-edge material all over the country about sex, drugs, rock and roll, politics, and religion. Are you ever getting confrontive reactions from audience members who don't agree with what you say?
Usually they leave before they can confront me. But to be honest, like we were talking earlier, people are very open to anybody who speaks very rationally. You know, I don't do it. I don't deal in slogans or in superstitions.
Mm-hmm.
So people open up and they come up to me and they go, "Thanks for saying that," because we don't hear that said. You know.
So you're getting more positive reaction than
negative.
Absolutely. That's very interesting.
Absolutely.
Because your stuff is so cutting edge, I would think it would rile some people.
You know, there's always that handful, but, you know, they would be riled by anybody. They put me on a par with doing dirty jokes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The mind is shut when they walk in, so I can't help those people.
How do you create material?
Well, you know, I absorb a lot of it through reading the paper and watching the news, and then I go on stage, and it's just something strikes me, you know, something just strikes my sense of irrationality,
mm-hmm.
you know, and out it comes.
So you create it right on stage? You don't start and write lines?
No, I do it on stage, generally.
Well, it takes a lot of guts.
It takes, what it does, I've always done it that way, and all it takes is, like, the premise, and then the audience is going, yeah, and you go, So, you know, it's kind of like it makes it new for me every night, too, because I've been doing this like 10 years. And, you know, it's not a script. So, and I couldn't do a script over and over again.
You know, that's remarkable to me. You've been doing it for 10 years. As I understand, your first set was when you were 13 years
old.
Right,
right. Well, you know, I've been doing it 10 years since professionally, but that was when I was 18. So, yeah, I first went on when I was 13 at a church talent show. And they were just as surprised as I was. And as frightened.
What was the content of your 13-year-old set?
Well, when I started, Woody Allen was my big influence. So I did a mixture of his, and I also wrote jokes a la Woody Allen. You know, I had a rough childhood, dot. But which was ludicrous, because here I am, this WASP, upper-middle-class kid. Yeah, I had a rough childhood. But I remember one of the jokes I did of his was, I was breastfed from falsies. And the audience went, huh? Ooh, he said breast. So even then, you know, the
Where
seed was
this?
Planted.
Where was this?
Oh, this was at a church camp in some small Texas town.
That's where you're from originally, Texas?
That's where I grew up, in
uh-huh.
Houston. I lived in Jersey before that. I've lived all over.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm sorry, keep telling us about your 13-year-old set. So you said breast in front of this very straight group, and they were shocked. And
right, because you know, in a Baptist, you know, we were raised with a very healthy self hatred of our bodies, and any which continues to this day. But so even then, I was like controversial, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That planted the seed.
It was the beginning of your controversial career.
Right.
Now, you this is say you've been doing it professionally for 10 years. Now you began in 1979 in was it Houston-based Outlaws of Comedy.
Right.
Led by Sam Kinison. I'm very curious.
Right.
I've heard a lot about the Outlaws of Comedy from Houston. I'm not completely familiar with them. Tell us about that.
Okay, well, Sam was there, I was there, and there was two other fellows. See, what happened was Sam's always been controversial, you know, and the people at the club that we worked at found him to be too dangerous. Even though crowds, he was the most popular guy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, crowds would call up, "When is that little fat guy going on?"
Yeah.
And he used to do, and he didn't do the screaming part then, but he always had that funniness to him, the wildness. And the people at the club couldn't deal with this guy, man. They kept kicking him off the shows, you know, saying, "Well, you can't talk about this on stage," or "You can't talk about that." And he's like, "Well, yeah, I can. Watch." "What do you mean I can't? I did it last night, and I'm going to do it tonight." And that was the great attitude, you know, because, I mean, how do you suppress what you can or can't talk about? Excuse me, if it works. Plus, if it dies, it's me dying. It's not your club dying, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The whole mentality, man, it was just a beautiful little microcosm of a man trying to be free and people trying to suppress him because they're afraid.
Right.
So finally, they kicked him out forever. They said, "Don't come back to our club." And he went up to the club that night, and the guy that he felt was responsible for that went up and got in a fight with the guy and broke his leg.
Really?
Like, fractured his leg, yeah.
Wow.
And then we formed, we all said, "We're out of here," you know. And he and I and Carl LeBove and a guy named Robert Barber did a show called the Outlaw Texas Outlaw Comics.
Mm-hmm.
And that started the Outlaw thing. And since then, I was in a group called the Outlaws, and he formed another group called the Outlaws. But that's how that all happened.
When you say a group, you guys toured together doing different clubs around the country,
right,
billing yourself as the Outlaws,
right,
of comedy.
Right, mm-hmm. And we did a little different than he did. We did theme shows like Outlaw Comics Get Religion, Outlaw Comics Get Political, and we would do whole shows on one theme,
mm-hmm,
which is a unique and wonderful idea and should be done today.
Are they recorded? Do you have them on cassette or anything?
We have them on video. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I'd love to see
and,
some of them.
And they were strong. They were real. And we did something, too, besides just doing stand-up. We did all our characters or whatever, all under the theme, you know. And it was kind of colorful, and the audience really dug it, man. It wasn't just four stand-ups going up back-to-back. Mm-hmm. Well, here's why I hate Reagan.
Right.
I mean, and also the material was very, very, very philosophical based. It wasn't, you know, well, Reagan's neck moves under the helicopter. That's our political stuff. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't that.
Right. It was deeper.
I mean, deeper than that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And audiences ate it up.
Now, I've been reading about you, and you say that your agenda is more than just making people laugh in comedy clubs. You want to bring what you call religion of self to the audience. What do you mean by religion of self?
Hey, did I say that? Wow. God, that does sound pretty big. I don't know if I can deal with that.
Maybe your PR guy wrote it to make it look
yeah,
good.
Yeah, really, man. Just, I didn't know Joan of Arc had a publicist.
didn't mean to pin you down.
Well, no, you know, absolutely. I mean, I don't get it. I mean, what? We're all, you know, I mean, I'm gonna get goofy on you, but we're all like, you know, the perfect and holy children of God. And I don't see any, being the perfect and holy children of God, how any limits could possibly be put upon us. Could
mm-hmm.
there? Could there, under that premise?
Not at all.
Not at all. Well, that's the point of my act.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just want to be free of the fears and anxieties of death and superstitions of religion, too, which is another thing. Being raised in a Baptist, you know, with a God, an avenging God, a God who created hell for his children, you know, I'm sorry, but no. Wrong. You're wrong. That's an insane God, and therefore not mine. Because,
mm-hmm.
see, God would be very sane. Don't you get it?
Mm-hmm.
That's my act. All right? Everything branches off from that. So it's kind of an odd thing. You know, a lot of comedy clubs for years were not interested in hearing. But the thing is, I get laughs with it. You know what I mean? So I mm-hmm. am doing my job as far as the...
Do you actually state that on stage?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But I do it humorously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you know, like you heard the album. I mean, the good acid story is one way that I say it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where death is... there's no such thing as death, and we're all one consciousness experiencing itself subjectively.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here's Tom with the weather.
Mm-hmm.
A good acid story on the news. Great.
Oh, I find it very refreshing to talk to a comic whose main concern is consciousness and not filling comedy clubs. And I share a lot of your spiritual views. Our special guest this week is Bill Hicks. Let's talk to him again. Now, you're going to be doing Caroline's in New York City very soon, and I'm wondering what some of the new topics are that you're going to cover in your act that are not on your album.
Oh, man, there's a lot of great stuff. First of all, the Judas Priest trial. This is, you know the story there. These,
mm-hmm,
these
sure.
kids, these two kids were like giant fans of the group Judas Priest. They listened to this one album for like 5 hours and then went out and committed suicide, and now their parents are suing the group Judas Priest. Now, I mean, I'm not trying to be facetious about these kids, but how many people have listened to Judas Priest and not committed suicide? All those people. And those two did? Then I guess that might not be it. End of case. All right? That's what we need, is someone just to cut to the chase and let's say it and move on quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Let's solve the problems, not dwell in them.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then that gets to the, you know, the back masking. Why would any, you know, band, I mean, look at, why would I go on stage and subliminally tell my audience to commit suicide? It would be kind of self-defeating, wouldn't it? Eventually I'll be playing to, like, three deaf people. That would be my crowd, you know? It makes no sense. So cut it out. You're an idiot.
Right. If you had a subliminal message, it would be buy this album.
By
all my albums.
Exactly. But, you know, people are so shocked by these things. And it's like, look, how many people are born, you know, every day? I mean, like a million, a thousand, hundreds of thousands are born every day. Some of them are idiots.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. You know, look at the odds. Some of them are going to be losers.
Mm-hmm.
Not every species made it in evolution, you know. They don't all survive.
Mm-hmm. Well,
oops.
Can't argue with that. what else might be going on in your...
Pornography?
Uh-huh.
This is just too hot to be true, man. Mm-hmm. What is pornography? What is it? When did sex become dirty? I must have missed that meeting.
Mm-hmm.
They say pornography is anything that has no artistic merit that leads to sexual thoughts. Well, isn't that like every TV commercial? I mean, when I see those two twins on that Double Mint commercial, I'm not thinking about gum, you know? I am thinking about chewing, but gum has little to do with it. Double your pleasure. Oh, yeah, yeah. Where's the Wrigley's?
Good point. That does fall into the category of pornography by that definition.
By that definition.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing, quickly about commercials. This is just a personal thing I got to tell you. Diet Coke, and I don't care how many times they run that commercial, just for the taste of it.
Uh-huh.
Diet Coke sucks. Mm-hmm. Okay? Run the commercial a zillion times, it'll still suck.
Mm-hmm.
Case closed. I just wanted to say that.
So you're going to be doing the Diet Coke comedy tour.
I'm not into that. All these guys doing Diet... I mean, just look at them sucking up that Diet Coke money, man. Is it abhorrent to you or what? You know, it's like on the album. What real rock star would do that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's Keith Moon for Snickers. Sometimes I'm doing a drum solo and I haven't eaten for like 3 weeks. The needle broke off in me arm. I eat a Snickers.
Yeah, but we got the Rolling Stones doing it for what, Budweiser?
It's pathetic. And what, even Sinatra?
Was that Budweiser the tour they did with
right,
the Stones?
Right. Even Sinatra does beer commercials. Man, it's like there's nothing sacred.
Well, they wave big checks in front of these people. Real big checks.
Yeah, I know it. Well, that's
they say it's only a minute of your time. You know, 2 minutes.
Right.
Here's a half a mil, babe. It's okay.
I don't know. I guess I have this weird conscience. Conscience. Look it up in a pre-Reagan dictionary.
So you're a big fan of the Ronald Reagan era.
Oh, I love Ronald 6 letters, Wilson 6 letters, Reagan 6 letters. What a wacky coincidence, huh? And when he got out of office, he moved to 666 St. Cloud Road in Bel Air. The coincidences abound. What are the odds of that?
That's right. He did move to 666.
Did you hear that?
That's incredible.
They changed it to 668, and uh-huh. They said, why'd you change it from 666 to 668? And Nancy Reagan goes, well, the beast has such negative connotations. Oh, does it? Satan? Negative? Well, talk me through that idea. Get real, man. These people. Yeah. Yeah, you're getting me fired up. Dude.
That's okay. Go for it, babe.
Man,
that's why we're here.
Man, where's my crowd, man?
We got a million people listening to you right now.
They're beautiful,
so,
man. I know they're out there. And this, the flag burning thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I personally don't believe the flag should be burned, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's knotted, soaked with kerosene, and stuck up Jesse Helms' rear. In which case, light away. But, you know, people are overreacting about it. You know what I mean? It's just a smokescreen, you know? And this Bush, family value, family value. Well, what family value? Whose family are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
How about the family of man, George?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I mean, we're all in this together, kitty poos.
That's right. Well, he's speaking to what he thinks is his constituency, and everybody else doesn't count.
Right. Well, sorry.
Yeah. Sorry. I think he's in for a rude awakening. Think we're getting political here?
I hope not. It has nothing to do with politics.
What do you like best about being a stand-up comic, and what do you like least?
Well, I love it. I love it, you know, so much. It's amazing that there is such a career. I love it because I get to go out and, you know, on a good night, it's phenomenal when you feel that connection with people, and also when material comes to you. It's just a great rush for a guy who's a creativity nut, such as myself.
Mm-hmm.
Loves that moment. Boom. You lose all sense of time and space, and you realize our true nature is creative and loving humans.
Mm-hmm.
On the bad side, these waitresses are really bitchy. You know? It's like, come on, man, you slept with John Fox last week, and you won't even give me a look. Hey, what's the deal? I'm up there talking about salvation. Come on. Now, oh. I don't know. The bad side, there is no bad side to it.
Okay, good. I'm glad to hear that.
None.
There's a man who loves his career, and for good reason. He's got a great one going. Bill Hicks, our special guest. And we will talk with him some more later on. He's going to give us his opinion of Andrew Dice Clay. I asked him for his opinion of Andrew Dice Clay.
Dice Clay is the Republican Red Fox. You know, he's the guy that Reagan, you know, Mommy, go on up to bed. Me and the boys want to listen to this new comic. And they sit around, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, as they listen about urine-colored foreigners and beating women.
Uh-huh.
Just good little fun we're having.
Right, right. Just having laughs. It's only jokes.
Yeah, right.
Right.
He's the Republican Red Fox.
That's a good line, Republican Red Fox.
You know, but it's not my cup of tea, you know, really, man. Sorry, when people go, Joe, how do you like Dice? You know, I mean, I be real. You know, I have to go back to, like, Robert Benchley and S.J. Perelman. They're funny.
Right.
You know, get a sense of history here, you know. But, no, I'm not into it. I'm not into much of our culture right now. There is no culture in America. None. There's no philosophy in America. There's slogans and there's religious superstitions. That's all there is.
Very interesting statement. I'll have to ponder that. No culture in America at all.
None.
Mm-hmm.
Zero.
Okay.
Or there is there, but it's not. It's definitely not in the limelight. I'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Any smatterings of possibilities? Any people thinking out there?
No. There's a revolution going on. There is. They're just not on the paper. They're not at the local bijou.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not. They don't want anybody to think out there, man. They just don't.
Mm-hmm.
That would upset the little plan they got going. The war on drugs. Well, which drugs? All of them?
Yes.
That include alcohol and cigarettes? Oh, whoa, hold on. We meant the untaxed drugs. Those are the ones we're warring against. See, thank God they tax alcohol. It means we got good roads we can get drunk and drive on. Otherwise, you'd be doing donuts in a wheat field, man. You know what I mean? I mean, how can they actually do war on drugs and alcohol, which kills more people than crack, coke, and heroin combined? They advertise on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Be real. We're not that stupid, okay?
Mm-hmm. Right on. Exactly.
Exactly. Thank you.
I predict a very big career for you, Bill. I think you're hot for good reason. You're saying things that a lot of people don't say on stage, and a lot of people want to hear. Do you have that feeling? What sense do you have of your place in the comedy world and your career potential? I mean, do you feel the excitement that's building around you?
I'm scared to death by it, and I'm also thrilled by it, you know, because, you know, it's really weird. I'm, like, very, you know, I was very self-destructive for a long time, and that's a hard thing to break, you know. But I think it's great, man. I mean, you know, I want people around me who are, like, friendly people. You know what I mean? I don't want people trying to keep me down. And in that regard, I think it'd be neat to get that kind of support.
Mm-hmm.
Have lots of people going, yes, we choose rational thought. We choose not to kill our brothers.
Mm-hmm.
We choose to love. I mean, yes, I'm excited about that. Bill Hicks, out on a limb. I just hope I live to see it.
Bill, I'm really pleased to meet you. I've been listening to your album. I've been reading about you. I've been hearing about you. And you are a fascinating guest. I enjoy the way your mind works, and I hope you'll come back and do the show again.
Anytime, Lynn. I enjoyed it. Thanks.
Thank you.
It was worth getting up for.
I'm glad you feel that way. We want you back. Our special guest this week, Bill Hicks.